Our final lesson in Deuteronomy as we cover these last four chapters here. We'll begin in chapter 31. We are going to be covering some instances where God is talking about future events. Moses gives us a song, and we have the death of Moses and the transfer of authority to Joshua. So we're kind of closing things out here with the book of Deuteronomy. This has been our outline for this class, and so we'll be covering those last few points there tonight. So beginning in chapter 31, we have this information looking into the future of kind of some things that are going to be happening. And Moses promises help from God. And we look here in this very first, let me just go back real quickly. As we finished chapter 30, we see some things that we're supposed to be doing. When he presents to them life and death and everything he sent before you, encouraging them to walk in all of God's statutes. And he calls heaven and earth as a witness against them, and we'll see more of that in these chapters. But in verse 19, he calls heaven and earth against them as life and death is set before them, and that they need to be obedient, to choose life, by loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice, by holding fast to him. And so we see this, again, connected to their length of days, connected to prosperity, as we've seen earlier. And so moving now in chapter 31, Moses went and spoke to all of Israel. He speaks to all of Israel. And we saw earlier that he was speaking to different groups, but he's speaking to all of Israel at this time. And it's apparently his birthday, verse 2. I'm 120 years old today, and I'm no longer able to go in and go out. I want to look at Numbers chapter 27, verse 17. Go back to Numbers chapter 27, verse 17. And this idea of going in or coming out is kind of an idea of leadership. Beginning in verse 16 of Numbers 27, may the Lord, the God of spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, so the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep which have no shepherd. And this is talking about when Joshua was to succeed Moses. And so this idea of going out and coming in before the people is kind of leading them in and out and being that leader. And he says, I'm no longer able to go out and come in. As the Lord has told me, you shall not cross this Jordan. And so it is not because he is physically not able. This is what I want us to understand here. When he dies, he's still great in all of his health, 120 years old, he could have kept going. But the reason he's not going to be able to do this is because God told him that he's not going to be crossing the Jordan. This is not a health concern, right? This is I've come to the limitations of what God has said I'm going to be able to do. And we saw that in Numbers chapter 20, verse 24. And so verse 3, he encourages them about what's going to happen with them. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy the nations before you and shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. So he hands kind of the baton. Imagine he's in front of all the peoples of Israel, all right? Joshua, I imagine, is up there. He's getting this kind of visual idea of handing the baton off to Joshua. Moses has been this spiritual leader this whole time. And Joshua's looked up to Moses, I imagine, as he's been very close with Moses and some of the things that Moses did with the Lord. And so we see this kind of passing of the baton here. And the Lord, verse 4, the Lord will do to them just as he did to Sion and Og. And he talks about their other things that have been destroyed. And then encourages them to be strong and courageous. This is something that gets repeated not only here several times in this chapter, but you'll see it also in the book of Joshua. And that continual kind of be strong and courageous, Joshua. Be strong and courageous to the people. So verse 6, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes out with you. Do we read about the armaments of the Israelites? Have we read anywhere about their armaments, about what they have? And what kind of armaments do you think they have? What weapons of war do they have? So we have spears, possibly? shields, swords, yes, swords. What else? Bow and arrows, possibly, archers. Slings, yes. Those guys are kind of wicked with the slings. The tribe of Benjamin was known for that. They're stone, yeah, they have rocks. Oh, they have a plethora of rocks, right? All right, so think about all the weapons they have at their disposal. When we read through this, and God says, I'm the one that's going to go out and fight, they're just this ragtag group of people. They are not trained in military formation. We don't know what kind of training they've had. They're just kind of, in my mind, and the text does not tell us this, they get all their instruction from the Lord as far as how they go out to fight. Joshua may have had some sort of military background, we don't know. But all their instructions as to how they're going to fight, and we see these big wars, God gives them that information. God gives them, I'm the one going out before you. Why would they tremble? Why do you think, what would give them pause when they're going out against these nations? What do we know about the nations that they're going, or these groups of people they're going against? What do we know about their cities? What do we know about their fortifications?
They've been established.
They've been established. They've been there a really long time, right? They know how to fight in their land. They've already fought and defended themselves from other peoples. So there's that going against the history that's there. What else? They didn't have the same, you know, lines. Like their line and how far they would go to win is way farther maybe than so they didn't have the, of course, there's nothing fair in love and war, right, is what they say, right? Anyway, so yes, they didn't have those kind of scruples maybe. What else? More training? So again, going back to the establishment, they've been able, what about their cities? What do their cities have? What did Jericho have? Big walls. Now, not all of them did. Not all of them had big walls, but a lot of them fortified, and he talks about that. When the people came back from spying on the land, what did they say about the statue or the stature of the peoples? They're giants. They're huge, right? They have chariots of iron, and they have, you know, so why would they tremble going out? Why would they tremble by going out against these people? They're human, right? And they don't have the experience. They're, you know, so it's legitimate that they might be afraid. It's legitimate. Yes. So, well, I don't know all in these circumstances. A lot of times they were outnumbered in the future, but yeah. So there's all these kind of reasons why they might be afraid. Because when we start thinking about what God would have us to do, do you break down the tasks that God gives you in your life and start looking at the details of it and start looking at the day-to-day? So here it is, we're in Bible class and we have a message about being strong and courageous and like, yeah, I'm going to be strong and courageous, and you go out there to actually do it and you're like, eh. Your courage dries up when somebody says hi. Your courage dries up when somebody says, well, I don't think I believe in God. Your courage dries up. Do you see what I'm getting at? So when God asked them to be strong and courageous and do not be afraid, he was actually asking them to go out into battle, into physical combat. And some of you are saying, I would rather do some physical combat than, you know, deal with people, which I understand. I have days like that too. But do you see the comparison here? Like, go out and be strong and courageous. They were going out to fight physically. And if they were paying attention, did they really have to be afraid? I think a lot of times we forget what God has already done. All right, they had seen God do many wondrous things, and they forget. And we read about all that God has done and all the promises, and we sometimes we forget. It's human. It's human nature, right? And so he tells the people, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. The Lord is the one who's going before you. And then in verse 7, he goes into talking about to Joshua. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him, in the sight of all Israel, all right, so everybody could see, in front of God and everybody is how you'd say that in the south, okay, or north of here anyway. Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you, and he will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Here's this assurance over and over and over and over again about God's deliverance and God's presence in fighting. And so we see this Moses is not saying this just for Joshua, right? He's saying this for the people to hear them and to charge. And we see this kind of passing of the torch, so to speak, here. What did Moses do with this law in verse 9? They gave it to the priests, they gave it to the elders, the ones who carried the ark, so a group specifically, those who were in charge of touching the holy things. He gave them the actual words and gave it to the elders. These are supposed to be the religious, these are supposed to be the responsible kind of people to make sure that they know the law. These are the responsible parties of Israel. And so it's something that's supposed to be read every 7 years in front of everyone in the Feast of Booths. And you shall read this law in front of all of Israel, verse 11, in their hearing. Verse 12, assemble the people, the men, the women, the children, the alien who is in your town, so they may hear and learn and fear the Lord your God and be careful to observe all his words of this law. Do you see that? So everybody, every 7 years, everybody gets together and they read from the law and they have a reading so that they may learn to fear God and do these things. Everybody's supposed to be there. Verse 13, their children who have not known will hear, learn, and fear the Lord your God. It's interesting that he has this, he says, all the peoples are supposed to be there, everybody's supposed to come, and your children will learn. Do you see the emphasis here on the children learning? It's important. When in him emphasizing children learning and them and their process of being educated, in the law, what is he trying to prepare? What is he trying to prepare for the future? Generation to generation. This is something, you know, we saw this earlier in Deuteronomy. When your son asks or when your child asks, tell them this is what happened. Talk to them about these things. And so at the very beginning, we saw this in the book of Deuteronomy. And we see this again at the end of Deuteronomy. Do not forget to teach this to your children. Is it still pertinent that we teach these things to our children? Yes, it is. It certainly is. And God has given that to us in order to do that task. And so we make sure that they learn and know. And so that they will hear and learn and fear. And that's a formula there. Right? Hear, learn, and then fear. And so you got to get those things. So the Lord, then we get into this idea that Israel will fall away, and God kind of talks about this happening. And I think about this as far as Moses hearing this message kind of at the end, right? He's given this impassioned plea, and he's been writing all this stuff down for them to remember, to do carefully, make sure they do all these things, to observe. And they go up before the tent of the meeting, and Joshua and Moses, and God is there. In what form is God? How do we know God is there? The cloud, the pillar of cloud. The Shekinah glory of God is there and his presence is there. And so they're there with God. So it's no secret that God is in his holy. He's there at the tent of tabernacle meeting. And the people will arise and play the harlot. So he tells them in verse 16, behold, you're about to lie down with your fathers. This is his message to Moses. You're about to pass away. You're about to die. And all these people that you've been teaching and nurturing and bringing up and holding them by their hands, what does he say? It's going to be awesome. Everything's going to be just fine. Moses, what does he tell them? They're going to go astray. They're going to go astray. Again, right? Again. And so Moses hears this. They'll go after strange gods in the land into the midst of which they're going, and then we'll forsake me and break my covenant which I have made with them, then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them. Just like he said he would, evils and troubles will come upon them. Verse 18, but I will surely hide my face on that day because of all the evil which they do, for they will turn to their gods. Thanks. Appreciate that. God's being very upfront with Moses, and eventually this will happen. And think about that as we see what Moses is about to do and some of the language that he uses. He says, verse 19, he's now commanded to write a song. Now write this song for yourselves and teach it to the sons of Israel and put it on their lips so the song may be a witness for me against the sons of Israel. Write a jingle that they will not forget. and make it to where it gets into their ears, and they will not forget the words of this song. How many of you know a song that if somebody hums a few bars of that song, it gets stuck in your head and you cannot get it out? Right? There's those. I do not want to hear any humming. I don't want to hear any of that. But you understand what I'm saying? So God uses this idea of singing. He uses song to be written to be a reminder and a witness against them. Remember these things. Remember this song. Remember these words that you are being taught. And so they will be a witness for you. For when I bring them into the land flowing milk and honey, which I swore to their fathers, and they have eaten and are satisfied and have become prosperous. Do you guys have a different word for prosperous there? What's that? Sorry? Thrive. They'll thrive.
Grown
fat. Yeah, literally it's grown fat. Right? They got prosperous, right? Maybe a nice thing to say to people. You look so prosperous, right? That's what they'll say to me. All right. Especially if somebody keeps cooking your ribs, right? So anyway, so yes. So they look prosperous. Now, they will turn to other gods and serve them and spurn me and break my covenant. And we'll talk more about this in a moment, but here's this kind of, again, this idea. They go in, they've been dependent on God, and they get all this stuff, houses they didn't build, wells they didn't dig, vineyards they didn't plant, right? And he warned them, do not forget me. But you're going to go in there, and you're going to get looking prosperous, and they'll turn to other gods. Then it shall come about when many evils and troubles will come, and this song will testify before them as a witness. This song will be a witness against them. All right, this is like a breakup song, okay? It's going to be a witness against them, okay, about what they've done. He says, for it shall not be a witness, for it shall not be forgotten from the lips of their descendants. For I know their intent, which they are developing today. The seeds of their disobedience, the seeds of them following away from God, is already in their hearts right now. I know today that this is the case. All right, this is what he's telling Moses. And Moses is like, great. This is great. So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the sons of Israel. They had a jam session, okay, and they wrote this song. So verse 23, we have a 23 or 24 to 30, we have Moses and Joshua's commissioned. Then he commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and courageous, and you shall bring the sons of Israel into the land. Again, this is a theme that gets repeated after this into the book of Joshua. And it's great to tie these together. And I believe, Dan, you're teaching a class of Joshua next, I believe, is happening next, so that y'all will get right into that. So verse 24, it came about when Moses finished writing the words of the law, the book, and then until they were complete, that Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant, Lord, saying, take this book, place it beside the Ark of the Covenant, that it remain there as a what? A witness. All right, are you seeing what's happening here? We've got a song. We've got a breakup song, right? You're going to learn it. And if you get to a point where God is no longer with you anymore and you start singing this song, you're going to remember, oh, yes, this is what God said this was going to happen, right? Now you have also another witness. You have the book of the law. You have the complete law written down. It is a witness against you. Heaven and earth will be called as a witness against you. Do you see what God's doing here? Placing all this weight upon them. So you, what you're entering into, this covenant relationship you're entering into, there are witnesses to you entering into this covenant relationship with God. That these things have been communicated, the expectations of God have been communicated, and you have said that you are amenable to those expectations. And so it will remain as a witness, verse 26. Verse 27, for I know your rebellion and your stubbornness. Behold, while I am still alive with you today, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more then after my death, Moses is saying to the people. So Moses gets this information from God. Moses, it's about time for you to die. And the people are going to rebel. They're going to play the harlot. They're going to go after other gods. And now he goes back to the people, and he can say with authority, you're going to rebel. I know you're stubborn. I know you've been stubborn, right? I know this. And so he speaks with authority, talking about what they're going to do. He says, you've done it while I'm here. How much more when I'm gone? It just sounds like a parent, right? Did you ever, like, did your parents ever warn you when they left? You better be good, right? Yeah, apparently just me. Okay. So assemble to me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their hearing, and call heavens and the earth to witness against them. Are you seeing this? Again, this idea of a witness. I know that after my death, you'll act corruptly in turn. I know this is going to happen because God told me you're going to do this. Now, we don't see that until later on in the book of Judges. During the lifespan of Joshua, they remained faithful. But shortly after his death, there arose a generation that did what was right in his own eyes. Everybody, man did what was right in his own eyes in the book of Judges. and so he just says this is going to be happening. He says, I've commanded you, evil will befall you in the latter days, for you will do which is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. Then Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel, all the words of this song until they were complete. And so chapter 32 is this song that we get to look at here, the Song of Moses. And so we actually sing a song that mentions the Song of Moses. We don't sing the Song of Moses very often. But we have here, give ear, O heavens, let me speak, hear the words. So we have this appeal to nature. This is something he's done before. He calls heaven as a witness against them. And again, the same kind of situation. So what God has created, his world, is nature, is teaching what they need to understand. Let me teach. My teaching drop as the rain. My speech distill in the dew. We see this information. How do they describe God in verse 4? How is God described? A rock. The rock, right? His word is perfect. If you want to look over here at Psalm 18, this is something that we see. David uses this theme quite a bit in the Psalms. Psalm 18, verse 2. So what is... beginning of verse 1, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. This is interesting here that this information is used. The rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just. And we begin speaking about the nature of God, and the faithfulness of God, the righteousness of God. You know, when God talked to Abraham about, you know, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, his comment about that was, will not the God of all the earth do what is right? And the righteousness of God, and appealed to the righteousness of God. And so we see this here, the introduction and God's righteousness, 1 through 5. And then we see this rebellion. Oh, I forgot, I got them all up there for you. Excellent. So we see in verses 16 through 18 this rebellion. So here's the righteousness of God, and then despite all that, despite what God has done, the people rebel, which is what we saw was going to happen. And they've acted foolishly. Foolish and unwise people, is not he your father who has bought you? He has made you and established you. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, look back in Deuteronomy chapter 4, this idea of God as a father is something we've seen. It's for the Lord your God is a compassionate God. He will not fail you, nor destroy, nor forget the covenant with your fathers, which he swore to them. And the compassion of God is spoken about. And then we look, Isaiah chapter 63, verse 17, also talks about God as a father in watching over Israel, that they have rejected God. And what are they supposed to remember? In verse 7, what are they supposed to remember? Days of old. What happened in the days of old? What does he start describing? What's that? Yeah. Remember the days of old. Consider the years of all your generations. Ask your father. He will inform you. Your elders, and they will tell you. When the Most High gave nations their inheritance, when he separated the sons of man, the boundaries of peoples, according to the sons of Israel. And it's talking about how God has taken care of Israel. Ask your fathers, ask the elders about what God did with his people. Remember what he did. They're supposed to tell you. Go back and have them tell you what God has done. I found him in a desert land, in the howling waste of a wilderness. He encircled him, cared for him, guarded him as the pupil of his eye. You see, God's care, God's watching after them. They were supposed to remember this and remind people of these things. Like an eagle that stirs up its nest, that hovers over its young, he spread his wings and caught them. Borne up on eagle's wings is what Exodus chapter 19, verse 4 talks about as well. And so he carried them on his pinions. I don't know if we lived out in on the Snake River in southern Idaho, and it was the largest concentration of the birds of prey in North America. You had owls and eagles and golden eagles and all the things with beaks and claws and things. We would climb around the cliffs because it was fun. That's what you do when you're a teenager. But you would know when you got too close to an eagle's nest because they would pin you down under a rock if you weren't careful. They will come dive down after you and all their talons out and everything. And it's intimidating when you're a young man and there's a giant flighted bird of death is coming down on your head. So what God is saying is, that's who I am to you. That's what I'm doing. I'm taking care of you like an eagle would take care of and defend its nests. They are vicious in defending their nests and defending their young. And so God is saying, that's who I am to you. But if you do and stay in the relationship that we're supposed to be in, we talk about how the Lord guided him, verse 12. And so we're singing this song to remind us who's supposed to teach us, to remind us of what God has done for us, and remind us of all the things that he's promised us and the way he's taken care of us in verses 13 and 14, and all the blessings out of nothing, out of the produce of the field. He made him suck honey from the rock, so one of the most precious things out of one of the most common things, and oil out of flint. And that's just how God has made the land to be very productive for them. Verse 15 begins with what word? But. That's like, we go to the second stanza of the song, I guess. But we get into this part of the song, but Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You are grown fat, thick, and sleek. Jeshurun is the upright one. This is another name for Israel, is what this name is here. It's when you were upright, you were the upright one. But then the upright or the righteous one, who was supposed to be Israel, started not being righteous, started not being the righteous one. They got all these things. He forsook God who made him, scorned the rock of his salvation, made him jealous with strange gods. And we see this kind of falling away in this relationship. You neglected the rock, verse 18, who had begotten you, and forgot the God who gave you birth. And we see them this change in their relationship. And so the Lord saw this, it was spurned. Verses 19 through 33, we see this punishment. What kind of things are happening? What is God saying he is going to do? Verses 19 through 33. What is he saying is going to happen? What's that? Despise them? What else? What's that? He's hiding his face from them, right? He's no longer looks upon them. He says that they are sons in whom is no faithfulness, verse 20. They have provoked me to anger. Look in Romans chapter 10. Look at something here. Acts and the letters to the Romans. All right, so Acts and Romans 10, just in case you're trying to find the book of Romans. Verse 19. But I say, surely Israel did not know, did they? For first Moses says, I will make you jealous by that which is not a nation. By a nation without understanding will I anger you. So what is he saying? I will provoke them to anger with a foolish, with those who are not my people. Verse 21, I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. Who is he talking about? He's talking about us, ladies and gentlemen. Right? He's talking about the Gentiles coming in and being a part of this. So I'm going to provoke them to anger with a foolish nation, and not, those who are not my people. Talking about those of us. You want to write here Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 12 also talks about this as well. Ephesians 2, verse 12, Romans 10, 19. For a fire is kindled in my anger. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 24 talks about God as a consuming fire. Deuteronomy 4, 24. Also, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 29, the last verse of Hebrews chapter 12 says that our God is a consuming fire. All right, so that concept of his jealousy is not abated. That is still the case. And so he's heaping misfortunes on them, verse 23. They are a nation lacking counsel, verse 28. Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, that my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. If you want to write out there, Hosea chapter 4, verse 6. Verse 28 of chapter 32, they are a nation lacking counsel, and there is no understanding in them. This is the song, all right? This is the song they're supposed to be memorizing. So if you're good now, right, if you understand now, and then you memorize this song, there's some warnings here that are very explicit, right? There's some things that we should put to memory about what it is to fall away from God, and some warnings. They are a nation lacking counsel. Which means what? If we're going to stay faithful with God, then we need to make sure we're keeping people educated about what it is. Our leaders need to be educated men. They need to be people who are able to teach and do these things. So this is not anything that is new. He goes on to verse 32 to talk about their vine is the vine of Sodom and the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes, the grapes of poison and clusters of bitter. So this is the same kind of idea that we've seen in other places. And referring to those when they have fallen out of favor with God, when they do what is wrong, they're compared to Sodom and Gomorrah in their production and what they're supposed to be doing. If you want to write here Isaiah chapter 5, Isaiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, the grapes are the grapes of poison, Isaiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, and then tie that in with Luke chapter 13, 6 through 9, when Jesus said, you know, you were supposed to be, there's an expectation that I've done everything in the field to make you produce good fruit, and you're not producing fruit. Leave it alone this last year, and if it hasn't produced fruit, then we'll dig it up, and it'll be thrown into the fire. And so that same kind of imagery is used in Isaiah chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, and then, like I said, in Luke chapter 13, 6 through 9, there beside verse 32. So it's interesting that, again, that imagery keeps being used throughout the prophets, and Christ uses again when he's talking to them. So they're not missing it when Jesus uses some of these parables and uses some of this language. It's language that he has been used before, and the people are not missing the connections there. And so we see this with the punishment of the rebellious. Then we see God's vengeance, 34 through 36. The Lord will vindicate his people. He'll have compassion on his servants. When he sees their strength is gone and there's nothing remaining, bond or free. And then we see in verses 37 through 38, these false gods. And he will say, where are their gods, the rock in which they sought refuge? Do you see, God was called the rock, capital R. Look what he says here. Where are your gods? Where are they? Why aren't they taking care of you? Why aren't they doing anything good for you despite what I'm doing? It's very similar to what Elijah said, right, on the mountain with the prophets of Baal. And so, also in verse 39, see how that I am he. The I am statement is made here again at the end of the book. See now that I am he, and there is no God besides me. If you want to write out here John chapter 8, John chapter 8, verse 24. And Christ made a similar statement, the I am statement, and concerning himself. John 8, 24, and then verse 58 as well, of that same chapter. John 8, 24, and John 8, 58. And so this I am statement is being made. He also says in verse 40, indeed, I lift up my hand to heaven and say, as I live forever. So as though he's swearing before the people unto himself. He can't swear by anything bigger. And so he's swearing here as well, confirming his oath by himself. You can write out here Hebrews chapter 6, Hebrews chapter 6, verses 16 through 20. And the same idea, the Hebrew writer talks about how God could not swear by anything greater than himself, so he swore by himself that he had done this thing. Hebrews chapter 6, verses 16 through 20. So here God is going to talk about the punishment and what he's going to do. If I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on justice, I will render vengeance on my adversaries and I will repay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood and my sword will devour flesh. So this is kind of intense, right? Maybe you don't teach this song to your little kids. That might give them nightmares. But do you understand the idea here? They want people to know and be able to hum a little tune to know about what God expects from this people. I don't know if, for you, a song can get stuck in your head, and you've only heard a couple of times, but how many times have you read through Bible passages and not memorized them? Do you see the connection between, okay, that's not me, okay. It's a long song, right? Lots of stanzas, this one. Yeah. It's a long version. This is probably like a 6 or 7 or 8 stanza song. So it's extended, yes. There's an abridged, there's probably an abridged version. So I did not research that offhand. I imagine they'd have to sing it. They're supposed to be singing this song. I didn't research that offhand. If there's other places where, and they sang the song of Moses, they didn't read it before they titled it, did they? No. Well, it is joyful in that if you stay inside the lines, right? If you stay inside the operational parameters with God, it is joyful. It is amazing. It's when you get outside the operational parameters when you should be fearful and trembling, right, in that scenario. So it can be joyful. But he spoke these words. Yes, sir.
There is joy. Look at verse 43. Mm-hmm. Yes, 43. That's us.
Yes.
When he brings the judgment against those people who've forgotten him,
yep.
That holds up the door for Christianity. It's the greatest joy on earth. It's
yes.
Yes.
Again, the idea, like I said in verse 43, rejoice, O nations, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants. So again, there is joy when you're operating inside the parameters that God has set up. Right? That's great. But it's when you step outside those parameters that things begin to change. But we see, again, this, we don't have time to go through the rest, but God alone is a true God, as we see here, and then we see the finishing up here, because of what he begins talking to Moses with Joshua to go up on the mountain. And you know, let's just move on here. We got to get to this really quickly. We have 2 seconds, I think. This final blessing, as we look here in verse 33, he goes over and covers not all of the tribes, but the majority of the tribes, giving a blessing to all of them, and again using verse 5, as he was king in Jeshurun, that is again referencing to Israel. But you see the names there of the different tribes. Joseph is mentioned here in representing Ephraim, and Manasseh as well in verse 13. And let's go to chapter 34. The death of Moses. And so he goes up on the mountain, and God calls him up on the mountain. And so he goes up on the mountain to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite of Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead as far as Dan. And so we get to see the, kind of these boundaries that God showed Moses this. Now, you couldn't literally see from this mountain all these things. All right, so in my mind, it's kind of like Soarin' at Disney, right? Like this is like gives him this image of all these things as he's standing there on the mountain. I don't know. That's just my interpretation. It doesn't say that, but in my mind, God is giving him, letting him see these things in his mind's eye about what's going on, what they're going to receive, the city of the palm trees, and there's all these different things. And this is a land which I swore to Abraham. Again, this is the completion of the promise. They're on the cusp of receiving this promise. This promise that's been made hundreds and hundreds of years ago is being made and fulfilled for them. And so he's getting to see at least that part of it. And so the servant of the Lord died there on the mountain. Verse 5, and Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. So he was still in good health. God just says, you couldn't go any further. This is as far as you needed to go. And they mourned him for 30 days, and then Joshua, the son of Nun, was filled with the spirit of wisdom, and he kind of took up his role. No prophet was risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. That's an important verse. If you want to write out here, Numbers chapter 12, Numbers chapter 12, verses 6 through 8, and then Hebrews chapter 3, 1 through 6 is a great study to look at those two passages together. Numbers 12, 6 through 8, and Hebrews 3, 1 through 6. So there's nobody that did anything like Moses was ever able to do until the coming of Christ. Thoughts, questions, comments? It was very quick kind of as we close there with this. There's a lot of information we have time to dive into, but hopefully at least this has whetted your appetite for reading through maybe more carefully the book of Deuteronomy and seeing God's plea to the people to be faithful and the warning of faithfulness, of not being faithful. Thank you very much for your attention tonight.